This is Audible.
Harper Audio presents Bridge to Terabithia, written by Catherine Patterson and performed by Robert Sean Leonard. I wrote this book for my son, David Lord Patterson, but after he read it, he asked me to put Lisa's name on this page as well, and so I do. For David Patterson and Lisa Hill, Banzai. Chapter 1. Jesse Oliver Ahrens, Jr.
Barum, 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 baripity, 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 baripity.
Good. His dad had the pickup going. He could get up now. Jess slid out of bed and into his overalls. He didn't worry about a shirt, because once he began running, he would be hot as popping grease, even if the morning air was chill. Or shoes, because the bottoms of his feet were by now as tough as his worn-out sneakers.
Where you going, Jess?
Maybelle lifted herself up sleepily from the double bed where she and Joyce Ann slept.
Shh,
he warned. The walls were thin. Mama would be mad as flies in a fruit jar if they woke her up this time of day. He patted Maybelle's hair and yanked the twisted sheet up to her small chin.
Just over the cow field,
he whispered. Maybelle smiled and snuggled down under the sheet.
Gonna run? Maybe.
Of course he was going to run. He had gotten up early every day all summer to run. He figured if he worked at it, and Lord had he worked, he could be the fastest runner in the fifth grade when school opened up. He had to be the fastest. Not one of the fastest or next to the fastest, but the fastest. The very best. He tiptoed out of the house. The place was so rattly that it screeched whenever you put your foot down, but Jess had found that if you tiptoed, it gave only a low moan, and he could usually get outdoors without waking Mama or Ellie or Brenda or Joyce Ann. Maybelle was another matter. She was going on 7, and she worshipped him, which was okay sometimes. When you were the only boy smashed between 4 sisters, and the older 2 had despised you ever since you stopped letting them dress you up and wheel you around in their rusty old doll carriage, and the littlest one cried if you looked at her cross-eyed, it was nice to have somebody who worshipped you, even if it got unhandy sometimes. He began to trot across the yard. His breath was coming out in little puffs, cold for August, but it was early yet. By noontime, when his mom would have him out working, it would be hot enough. Miss Bessie stared at him sleepily as he climbed across the scrap heap, over the fence, and into the cow field.
Moo,
she said, looking for all the world like another Maybelle with her big brown droopy eyes.
Hey, Miss Bessie, Jess said soothingly. Just go on back to sleep.
Miss Bessie strolled over to a greenish patch. Most of the field was brown and dry, and yanked up a mouthful.
That a girl, just eat your breakfast. Don't pay me no mind.
He always started at the northwest corner of the field, crouched over like the runners he had seen on Wide World of Sports. Bang, he said, and took off flying around the cow field. Miss Bessie strolled toward the center, still following him with her droopy eyes, chewing slowly. She didn't look very smart, even for a cow, but she was plenty bright enough to get out of Jess's way. His straw-colored hair flapped hard against his forehead, and his arms and legs flew out every which way. He had never learned to run properly, but he was long-legged for a 10-year-old, and no one had more grit than he. Lark Creek Elementary was short on everything, especially athletic equipment, so all the balls went to the upper grades at recess time after lunch. Even if a fifth grader started out the period with a ball, it was sure to be in the hands of a sixth or seventh grader before the hour was half over. The older boys always took the dry center of the upper field for their ball games, while the girls claimed the small top section for hopscotch and jump rope and hanging around talking. So the lower grade boys had started this running thing. They would all line up on the far side of the lower field, where it was either muddy or deep, crusty ruts. Earl Watson, who was no good at running but had a big mouth, would yell, "Bang!" and they'd race to a line they'd towed across at the other end. One time last year, Jesse had won. Not just the first heat, but the whole shebang. Only once. But it had put into his mouth a taste for winning. Ever since he'd been in first grade, he'd been that crazy little kid that draws all the time. But one day, April the 22nd, a drizzly Monday it had been, he ran ahead of them all, the red mud sloshing up through the holes in the bottom of his sneakers. For the rest of that day, and until after lunch on the next, he had been the fastest kid in the third, fourth, and fifth grades, and he only a fourth grader. On Tuesday, Wayne Pettis had won again, as usual, but this year, Wayne Pettis would be in the sixth grade. He'd play football until Christmas, and baseball until June with the rest of the big guys. Anybody had a chance to be the fastest runner. And by Miss Bessie, this year it was going to be Jesse Oliver Ahrens, Jr. Jess pumped his arms harder and bent his head for the distant fence. He could hear the third-grade boys screaming him on. They would follow him around like a country music star, and May Bell would pop her buttons. Her brother was the fastest, the best. That ought to give the rest of the first grade something to chew their cuds on. Even his dad would be proud. Jess rounded the corner. He couldn't keep going quite so fast, but he continued running for a while. It would build him up. Maybelle would tell Daddy, so it wouldn't look as though he, Jess, was a bragger. Maybe Dad would be so proud he'd forget all about how tired he was from the long drive back and forth to Washington and the digging and hauling all day. He would get right down on the floor and wrestle, the way they used to. Old Dad would be surprised at how strong he'd gotten in the last couple of years. His body was begging him to quit, but Jess pushed it on. He had to let that puny chest of his know who was boss. "Jess!" It was Maybelle yelling from the other side of the scrap heap. "Mama says you gotta come in and eat now. Leave the milking till later." Oh, crud. He'd run too long. Now everyone would know he'd been out and start in on him. "Yeah, okay." He turned, still running, and headed for the scrap heap. Without breaking his rhythm, he climbed over the fence, scrambled across the scrap heap, thumped Maybelle on the head, ow, and trotted on to the house. "Well, look at the big Olympic star," said Ellie, banging two cups onto the table so that the strong black coffee sloshed out. "Sweating like a knock-kneed mule." Jess pushed his damp hair out of his face and plunked down on the wooden bench. He dumped two spoonfuls of sugar into his cup and slurped to keep the hot coffee from scalding his mouth. "Ooh, Mama, he stinks." Brenda pinched her nose with her pinky crooked delicately. "Make him wash." "Get over here to the sink and wash yourself," his mother said without raising her eyes from the stove. "And step on it. These grits are scorched in the bottom of the pot already."
"Mama, not again," Brenda whined.
Lord, he was tired. There wasn't a muscle in his body that didn't ache.
"You heard what Mama said,"
Ellie yelled at his back.
"I can't stand it, Mama,"
Brenda again.
"Make him get his smelly self off this bench."
Jess put his cheek down on the bare wood of the tabletop.
"Jesse,"
his mother was looking now,
"and put on a shirt."
"Yes'm." He dragged himself to the sink. The water he flipped on his face and up his arms pricked like ice. His hot skin crawled under the cold drops. Maybelle was standing in the kitchen door watching him.
"Get me a shirt, Maybelle."
She looked as if her mouth was set to say no, but instead she said,
"You shouldn't ought to beat me in the head,"
and went off obediently to fetch his T-shirt. Good old Maybelle. Joyce Ann would have been screaming yet from that little tap. 4-year-olds were a pure pain.
"I got plenty of chores needs doing around here this morning," his mother announced as they were finishing the grits and red gravy.
His mother was from Georgia and still cooked like it.
"Oh, Mama,"
Ellie and Brenda squawked in concert. Those girls could get out of work faster than grasshoppers could slip through your fingers.
"Mama, you promised me and Brenda we could go to Millsburg for school shopping."
"You ain't got no money for school shopping."
"Mama, we're just going to look around."
Lord, he wished Brenda would stop whining so.
"Christmas! You don't want us to have no fun at all."
"Any fun," Ellie corrected her primly.
"Oh, shut up."
Ellie ignored her. "Miss Timmons is coming by to pick us up." I told Lolly Sunday you said it was okay. I feel dumb calling her and saying you changed your mind.
Oh, all right. But I ain't got no money to give you.
Any money, something whispered inside Jess's head.
I know, Mama. We'll just take the $5 Daddy promised us. No more than that.
What $5?
Oh, Mama, you remember?
Ellie's voice was sweeter than a melted Mars bar.
Daddy said last week we girls were going to have something for school.
I'll take it, his mother said angrily, reaching for her cracked vinyl purse on the shelf above the stove. She counted out 5 wrinkled bills.
Mama,
Brenda was starting again.
Can't we have just 1 more so it'll be 3 each?
No.
Mama, you can't buy nothing for $2.50. Just 1 little pack of notebook paper's gone up to...
No. Ellie got up noisily and began to clear the table. Your turn to wash, Brenda, she said loudly.
Ow, Ellie.
Ellie jabbed her with a spoon. Jesse saw that look. Brenda shut up her wine halfway out of her rose-luster lipsticked mouth. She wasn't as smart as Ellie, but even she knew not to push Mama too far. Which left Jess to do the work as usual. Mama never sent the babies out to help, although if he worked it right, he could usually get Maybelle to do something. He put his head down on the table. The running had done him in this morning. Through his top ear came the sound of the Timmins' old Buick.
"Wants oil,"
his dad would say, and the happy buzz of voices outside the screen door as Ellie and Brenda squashed in among the 7 Timminses.
"All right, Jesse, get your lazy self off that bench. Miss Bessie's bag is probably dragging ground by now, and you still got beans to pick."
Lazy? He was the lazy one. He gave his poor dead weight of a head 1 minute more on the tabletop.
"Jesse."
"Okay, Mama, I'm going."
It was Maybelle who came to tell him in the bean patch that people were moving into the old Perkins place down on the next farm. Jesse wiped his hair out of his eyes and squinted. Sure enough, a U-Haul was parked right by the door, one of those big jointed ones. These people had a lot of junk. But they wouldn't last. The Perkins place was one of those ratty old country houses you moved into because you had no decent place to go and moved out of as quickly as you could. He thought later how peculiar it was, that here was probably the biggest thing in his life, and he had shrugged it off as nothing. The flies were buzzing around his sweating face and shoulders. He dropped the beans into the bucket and swatted with both hands.
"Get me my shirt, Maybelle."
The flies were more important than any U-Haul. Maybelle jogged to the end of the row and picked up his T-shirt from where it had been discarded earlier. She walked back holding it with 2 fingers way out in front of her.
"Ooh, it stinks,"
she said, just as Brenda would have.
"Shut up," he said, and grabbed the shirt away from her.
Chapter 2. Leslie Burke. Ellie and Brenda weren't back by 7. Jess had finished all the picking and helped his mother can the beans. She never canned except when it was scalding hot anyhow, and all the boiling turned the kitchen into some kind of hellhole. Of course, her temper had been terrible, and she had screamed at Jess all afternoon and was now too tired to fix any supper. Jess made peanut butter sandwiches for the little girls and himself, and because the kitchen was still hot and almost nauseatingly full of bean smell, the 3 of them went outside to eat. The U-Haul was still out by the Perkins place. He couldn't see anybody moving outside, so they must have finished unloading.
"I hope they have a girl, 6 or 7, said Maybelle. "I need somebody to play with."
"You got Joyce Ann."
"I hate Joyce Ann. She's nothing but a baby."
Joyce Ann's lip went out. They both watched it tremble. Then her pudgy body shuddered, and she let out a great cry.
"Who's teasing the baby?"
his mother yelled out the screen door. Jess sighed and poked the last of his sandwich into Joyce Ann's open mouth. Her eyes went wide, and she clamped her jaws down on the unexpected gift. Now, maybe, he could have some peace. He closed the screen door gently as he entered and slipped past his mother, who was rocking herself in the kitchen chair watching TV. In the room he shared with the little ones, he dug under his mattress and pulled out his pad and pencils. Then, stomach down on the bed, he began to draw. Jess drew the way some people drink whiskey. The piece would start at the top of his muddled brain and seep down through his tired and tensed-up body. Lord, he loved to draw. Animals, mostly. Not regular animals like Miss Bessie or the chickens, but crazy animals with problems. For some reason, he liked to put his beasts into impossible fixes. This one was a hippopotamus just leaving the edge of the cliff, turning over and over, you could tell by the curving lines, in the air toward the sea below where surprised fish were leaping goggle-eyed out of the water. There was a balloon over the hippopotamus, where his head should have been, but his bottom actually was. "Oh," it was saying, "I seem to have forgot my glasses." Jesse began to smile. If he decided to show it to Maybelle, he would have to explain the joke, but once he did, she would laugh like a live audience on TV. He would like to show his drawings to his dad, but he didn't dare. When he was in first grade, he had told his dad he wanted to be an artist when he grew up. He'd thought his dad would be pleased. He wasn't. "What are they teaching you in that damn school?" he had asked. "Bunch of old ladies turning my only son into some kind of a..." He had stopped on that word, but Jess had gotten the message. It was one you didn't forget, even after 4 years. The devil of it was that none of his regular teachers ever liked his drawings. When they'd catch him scribbling, they'd screech about waste, wasted time, wasted paper, wasted ability. Except Miss Edmonds, the music teacher. She was the only one he dared show anything to, and she'd only been at school 1 year, and then only on Fridays. Miss Edmonds was one of his secrets. He was in love with her. Not the kind of silly stuff Ellie and Brenda giggled about on the telephone. This was too real and too deep to talk about, even to think about very much. Her long, swishy black hair and blue, blue eyes. She could play the guitar like a regular recording star, and she had this soft, floaty voice that made Jess squish inside. Lord, she was gorgeous. And she liked him, too. One day last winter, he had given her one of his pictures, just shoved it into her hand after class, and run. The next Friday, she had asked him to stay a minute after class. She said he was unusually talented, and she hoped he wouldn't let anything discourage him, but would keep it up. That meant, Jesse believed, that she thought he was the best. It was not the kind of best that counted either at school or at home, but it was a genuine kind of best. He kept the knowledge of it buried inside him like a pirate treasure. He was rich, very rich, but no one could know about it for now except his fellow outlaw, Julia Edmonds. "Sounds like some kind of hippie," his mother had said when Brenda, who had been in seventh grade last year, described Miss Edmonds to her. She probably was. Jess wouldn't argue that, but he saw her as a beautiful, wild creature who had been caught for a moment in that dirty old cage of a schoolhouse, perhaps by mistake. But he hoped, he prayed, she'd never get loose and fly away. He managed to endure the whole boring week of school for that one half-hour on Friday afternoons when they'd sit on the worn-out rug on the floor of the teacher's room, there was no place else in the building for Miss Edmonds to spread out all her stuff, and sing songs like "My Beautiful Balloon," "This Land Is Your Land," "Free to Be You and Me," "Blowing in the Wind," and because Mr. Turner, the principal, insisted, "God Bless America." Miss Edmonds would play her guitar and let the kids take turns on the auto harp, the triangles, cymbals, tambourines, and bongo drum. Lord, could they ever make a racket. All the teachers hated Fridays, and a lot of the kids pretended to. But Jess knew what fakes they were, sniffing hippie and peacenik. Even though the Vietnam War was over, and it was supposed to be okay again to like peace, the kids would make fun of Miss Edmonds' lack of lipstick or the cut of her jeans. She was, of course, the only female teacher anyone had ever seen in Lark Creek Elementary wearing pants. In Washington and its fancy suburbs, even in Millsburg, that was okay. But Lark Creek was the backwash of fashion. It took them a long time to accept there what everyone else could see by their TVs was okay anywhere else. So the students of Lark Creek Elementary sat at their desks all Friday, their hearts thumping with anticipation as they listened to the joyful pandemonium pouring out from the teacher's room, spent their allotted half hours with Miss Edmonds under the spell of her wild beauty and in the snare of her enthusiasms, and then went out and pretended that they couldn't be suckered by some hippie in tight jeans with makeup all over her eyes, but none on her mouth. Jess just kept his mouth shut. It wouldn't help to try to defend Miss Edmonds against their unjust and hypocritical attacks. Besides, she was beyond such stupid behavior. It couldn't touch her. But whenever possible, he stole a few minutes on Friday just to stand close to her and hear her voice, soft and smooth as suede, assuring him that he was a neat kid. "We're alike," Jess would tell himself, "me and Miss Edmonds. Beautiful Julia." The syllables rolled through his head like a ripple of guitar chords. "We don't belong at Lark Creek, Julia and me." "You're the proverbial diamond in the rough," she'd said to him once, touching his nose lightly with the tip of her electrifying finger. But it was she who was the diamond, sparkling out of that muddy, grassless, dirty brick setting.
"Jesse!"
Jess shoved the pad and pencils under his mattress and lay down flat, his heart thumping against the quilt. His mother was at the door.
"You milk yet?"
He jumped off the bed.
"Just going to."
He dodged around her and out, grabbing the pail from beside the sink and the stool from beside the door before she could ask him what he had been up to. Lights were winking out from all three floors of the old Perkins place. It was nearly dark. Miss Bessie's bag was tight, and she was fidgeting with discomfort. She should have been milked a couple of hours ago. He eased himself onto the stool and began to tug. The warm milk pinged into the pail. Down on the road, an occasional truck passed by with its dimmers on. His dad would be home soon, and so would those cagey girls who managed somehow to have all the fun and leave him and their mother with all the work. He wondered what they had bought with all their money. Lord, what he wouldn't give for a new pad of real art paper and a set of those marking pens, color pouring out onto the page as fast as you could think it. Not like stubby school crayons you had to press down on till somebody bitched about your breaking them. A car was turning in. It was the Timmonses. The girls had beat Dad home. Jess could hear their happy calls as the car doors slammed. Mama would fix them supper, and when he went in with the milk, he'd find them all laughing and chattering. Mama'd even forget she was tired and mad. He was the only one who had to take that stuff. Sometimes he felt so lonely among all these females. Even the one rooster had died, and they hadn't yet gotten another. With his father gone from sunup until well past dark, who was there to know how he felt? Weekends weren't any better. His dad was so tired from the wear and tear of the week and trying to catch up around the place that when he wasn't actually working, he was sleeping in front of the TV.
"Hey, Jesse?"
"Maybelle, the dumb kid wouldn't even let you think privately."
"What do you want now?"
He watched her shrink two sizes.
"I got something to tell you."
She hung her head. "You ought to be in bed," he said huffily, mad at himself for cutting her down.
"Ellie and Brenda come home."
Came home. Why couldn't he quit picking on her? But her news was too delicious to let him stop her sharing it. "Ellie bought herself a see-through blouse, and Mama's throwing a fit." "Good," he thought. "That ain't nothing to cheer about," he said. Baripity, baripity, baripity.
"Daddy!"
Maybelle screamed with delight and started running for the road. Jess watched his dad stop the truck, lean over to unlatch the door so Maybelle could climb in. He turned away. Darn lucky kid. She could run after him and grab him and kiss him. It made Jess ache inside to watch his dad grab the little ones to his shoulder or lean down and hug them. It seemed to him that he had been thought too big for that since the day he was born. When the pail was full, he gave Miss Bessie a pat to move her away. Putting the stool under his left arm, he carried the heavy pail carefully so none of the milk would slop out. "Mighty late with the milking, aren't you, son?" It was the only thing his father said directly to him all evening. The next morning, he almost didn't get up at the sound of the pickup. He could feel, even before he came fully awake, how tired he still was. But Maybelle was grinning at him, propped up on one elbow.
"Ain't you gonna run?"
she asked.
"No," he said, shoving the sheet away. "I'm gonna fly."
Because he was more tired than usual, he had to push himself harder. He pretended that Wayne Pettis was there, just ahead of him, and he had to keep up. His feet pounded the uneven ground, and he thrashed his arms harder and harder. He'd catch him.
"Watch out, Wayne Pettis," he said between his teeth. "I'll get you. You can't beat me."
If you're so afraid of the cow, the voice said, why don't you just climb the fence?
He paused in midair like a stop-action TV shot and turned, almost losing his balance, to face the questioner, who was sitting on the fence nearest the old Perkins place, dangling bare brown legs. The person had jaggedy brown hair cut close to its face and wore one of those blue undershirt-like tops with faded jeans cut off above the knees. He couldn't honestly tell whether it was a boy or a girl.
Hi, he or she said, jerking his or her head toward the Perkins place. We just moved in.
Jess stood where he was, staring. The person slid off the fence and came toward him.
I thought we might as well be friends, it said. There's no one else close by.
Girl, he decided. Definitely a girl. But he couldn't have said why he was suddenly sure. She was about his height. Not quite, though, he was pleased to realize as she came nearer.
My name's Leslie Burke.
She even had one of those dumb names that could go either way, but he was sure now that he was right.
What's the matter?
Huh?
Is something the matter?
Yeah, no. He pointed his thumb in the direction of his own house and then wiped his hair off his forehead. Jess Ahrens. Too bad Maybelle's girl came in the wrong size.
Well, well,
he nodded at her.
See you.
He turned toward the house. No use trying to run any more this morning. Might as well milk Bessie and get that out of the way.
Hey!
Leslie was standing in the middle of the cow field, her head tilted and her hands on her hips.
Where are you going?
I got work to do, he called back over his shoulder. When he came out later with a pail and stool, she was gone. Chapter 3. The Fastest Kid in the Fifth Grade. Jess didn't see Leslie Burke again except from a distance until the first day of school, the following Tuesday, when Mr. Turner brought her down to Mrs. Meyer's fifth-grade class at Lark Creek Elementary. Leslie was still dressed in the faded cutoffs and the blue undershirt. She had sneakers on her feet, but no socks. Surprise swooshed up from the class like steam from a released radiator cap. They were all sitting there primly dressed in their spring Sunday best. Even Jess wore his one pair of corduroys and an ironed shirt. The reaction didn't seem to bother her. She stood there in front, her eyes saying, "Okay, friends, here I am," in answer to their open-mouthed stares, while Mrs. Myers fluttered about trying to figure out where to put the extra desk. The room was a small basement one, and five rows of six desks already filled it more than comfortably.
31, Mrs. Myers kept mumbling over her double chin. 31. No one else has more than 29.
She finally decided to put the desk up against the side wall near the front.
Just there for now, Leslie, it's the best we can do, for now. This is a very crowded classroom.
She swung a pointed glance at Mr. Turner's retreating form. Leslie waited quietly until the seventh-grade boy who'd been sent down with the extra desk scraped it into position hard against the radiator and under the first window. Without making any noise, she pulled it a few inches forward from the radiator and settled herself into it. Then she turned once more to gaze at the rest of the class. 30 pairs of eyes were suddenly focused on desktop scratches. Jess ran his forefinger around the heart with two pairs of initials, B.R. and S.K., trying to figure out whose desk he had inherited. Probably Sally Koch's. Girls did more of the heart stuff in fifth grade than boys. Besides, B.R. must be Billy Rudd, and Billy was known to favor Myrna Hauser last spring. Of course, these initials might have been here longer than that, in which case... Jesse Ahrens, Bobby Greggs, pass out the arithmetic books, please. On the last word, Mrs. Myers flashed her famous first day of school smile. It was said in the upper grades that Mrs. Myers had never been seen to smile except on the first and the last day of school. Jess roused himself and went to the front. As he passed Leslie's desk, she grinned and rippled her fingers low in a kind of wave. He jerked a nod. He couldn't help feeling sorry for her. It must be embarrassing to sit in front when you find yourself dressed funny on the first day of school, and you don't know anybody. He slapped the books down as Mrs. Myers directed. Gary Fulcher grabbed his arm as he went by. "Gonna run today?" Jess nodded. Gary smirked. "He thinks he can beat me, the dumb head."
At the thought, something jiggled inside Jess. He knew he was better than he had been last spring. Fulcher might think he was going to be the best, now that Wayne Pettis was in sixth, but he, Jess, planned to give old Fulcher a little surprise come noon. It was as though he had swallowed grasshoppers. He could hardly wait. Mrs. Myers handed out books almost as though she were President of the United States, dragging the distribution process out in senseless signings and ceremonies. It occurred to Jess that she, too, wished to postpone regular school as long as possible. When it wasn't his turn to pass out books, Jess sneaked out a piece of notebook paper and drew. He was toying with the idea of doing a whole book of drawings. He ought to choose one chief character and do a story about it. He scribbled several animals and tried to think of a name. A good title would get him started. The Haunted Hippo. He liked the ring of it. Herbie the Haunted Hippo? Even better. The Case of the Crooked Crocodile. Not bad. What you drawing? Gary Fulcher was leaning way over his desk. Jess covered the page with his arm. Nothing? Oh, come on. Let me see. Jess shook his head. Gary reached down and tried to pull Jess's hand away from the paper. The Case of the Crooked... Come on, Jess, he whispered hoarsely. I ain't gonna hurt nothing. He yanked at Jess's thumb. Jess put both arms over the paper and brought his sneaker heel crashing down on Gary Fulcher's toe. Yow! Boys! Mrs. Myers' face had lost its lemon pie smile. He stomped my toe! Take your seat, Gary. But he... Sit down. Jesse Ahrens, one more peep from your direction, and you can spend recess in here, copying the dictionary. Jess's face was burning hot. He slid the notebook paper back under his desktop and put his head down. A whole year of this. 8 more years of this. He wasn't sure he could stand it. The children ate lunch at their desks. The county had been promising Lark Creek a lunchroom for 20 years, but there never seemed to be enough money. Jess had been so careful not to lose his recess time that even now he chewed his bologna sandwich with his lips tight shut and his eyes on the initialed heart. Around him, conversations buzzed. They were not supposed to talk during lunch, but it was the first day, and even Monster Mouth Myers shot fewer flames on the first day. She's eating clabber. 2 seats up from where he sat, Mary Lou Peoples was at work being the second snottiest girl in the 5th grade. Yogurt, stupid. Don't you watch TV? This from Wanda K. Moore, the snottiest, who sat immediately in front of Jess. Yuck. Lord, why couldn't they leave people in peace? Why shouldn't Leslie Burke eat anything she darn pleased? He forgot that he was trying to eat carefully and took a loud slurp of his milk. Wanda Moore turned around, all priss face. Jesse Ahrens, that noise is pure repulsive. He glared at her hard and gave another slurp. You are disgusting. Brrrring! The recess bell. With a yelp, the boys were pushing for first place at the door. The boys will all sit down. Oh, Lord. While the girls line up to go out to the playground, ladies first. The boys quivered on the edges of their seats like moths fighting to be freed of cocoons. Would she never let them go? All right, now if you boys... They didn't give her a chance to change her mind. They were halfway to the end of the field before she could finish her sentence. The first 2 out began dragging their toes to make the finish line. The ground was rutted from past rains, but had hardened in the late summer drought, so they had to give up on sneaker toes and draw the line with a stick. The 5th grade boys, bursting with new importance, ordered the 4th graders this way and that, while the smaller boys tried to include themselves without being conspicuous. How many you guys gonna run? Gary Fulcher demanded. Me, 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 everyone yelled. That's too many. No 1st, 2nd, or 3rd graders, except maybe the Butcher Cousins and Timmy Vaughn. The rest of you will just be in the way. Shoulders sagged, but the little boys backed away obediently. Okay, that leaves 26, 27. Stand still, 28. You get 28, Greg? Fulcher asked Greg Williams, his shadow. Right, 28. Okay, now, We'll have eliminations like always. Count off by fours, then we'll run all the ones together, then the twos.
We know, we know.
Everyone was impatient with Gary, who was trying for all the world to sound like this year's Wayne Pettis.
Jess was a four, which suited him well enough. He was impatient to run, but he really didn't mind having a chance to see how the others were doing since spring. Fulcher was a one, of course, having started everything with himself. Jess grinned at Fulcher's back and stuck his hands into the pockets of his corduroys, wriggling his right forefinger through the hole. Gary won the first heat easily and had plenty of breath left to boss the organizing of the second. A few of the younger boys drifted off to play King of the Mountain on the slope between the upper and lower fields. Out of the corner of his eye, Jess saw someone coming down from the upper field. He turned his back and pretended to concentrate on Fulcher's high-pitched commands. Hi. Leslie Burke had come up beside him. He shifted slightly away. Aren't you running? Later. Maybe if he didn't look at her, she would go back to the upper field where she belonged. Gary told Earl Watson to bang the start. Jess watched. Nobody with much speed in that crowd. He kept his eyes on the shirt tails and bent backs. A fight broke out at the finish line between Jimmy Mitchell and Clyde Deal. Everyone rushed to see. Jess was aware that Leslie Burke stayed at his elbow, but he was careful not to look her way. Clyde! Gary Fulcher made his declaration. It was Clyde.
It was a tie, Fulcher, a fourth grader protested. I was standing right here.
Clyde Deal.
Jimmy Mitchell's jaw was set.
I won, Fulcher. You couldn't even see from way back there.
It was Deal.
Gary ignored the protests.
We're wasting time. All threes line up, right now.
Jimmy's fists went up.
Ain't fair, Fulcher.
Gary turned his back and headed for the starting line.
Oh, let them both run in the finals. What's it gonna hurt? Jess said loudly.
Gary stopped walking and wheeled to face him. Fulcher glared first at Jess and then at Leslie Burke.
Next thing, he said, his voice dripping with sarcasm, next thing you're gonna want to let some girl run.
Jess's face went hot.
Sure, he said recklessly. Why not?
He turned deliberately toward Leslie.
Wanna run?
He asked.
Sure,
she was grinning. Why not?
You ain't scared to let a girl race, are you, Fulcher?
For a minute, he thought Gary was going to sock him, and he stiffened. He mustn't let Fulcher suspect that he was scared of a little belt in the mouth. But instead, Gary broke into a trot and started bossing the threes into line for their heat.
You can run with the fours, Leslie.
He said it loudly enough to make sure Fulcher could hear him and then concentrated on the runners.
See, he told himself. You can stand up to a creep like Fulcher. No sweat.
Bobby Miller won the threes easily. He was the best of the fourth graders, almost as fast as Fulcher.
But not as good as me, Jess thought.
He was beginning to get really excited now. There wasn't anybody in the fours who could give him much of a race. Still, it would be better to give Fulcher a scare by running well in the heat. Leslie lined up beside him on the right. He moved a tiny bit to the left, but she didn't seem to notice.
At the bang, Jess shot forward. It felt good, even the rough ground against the bottom of his worn sneakers. He was pumping good. He could almost smell Gary Fulcher's surprise at his improvement.
The crowd was noisier than they'd been during the other heats. Maybe they were all noticing. He wanted to look back and see where the others were, but he resisted the temptation. It would seem conceited to look back. He concentrated on the line ahead. It was nearing with every step.
Oh, Miss Bessie, if you could see me now.
He felt it before he saw it. Someone was moving up. He automatically pumped harder. Then the shape was there in his sideways vision. Then suddenly pulling ahead. He forced himself now. His breath was choking him and the sweat was in his eyes, but he saw the figure anyhow. The faded cutoffs crossed the line a full 3 feet ahead of him. Leslie turned to face him with a wide smile on her tanned face. He stumbled and without a word began half-walking, half-trotting over to the starting line. This was the day he was going to be champion, the best runner of the fourth and fifth grades, and he hadn't even won his heat. There was no cheering at the other end of the field. The rest of the boys seemed as stunned as he. The teasing would come later, he felt sure, but at least for the moment, none of them were talking.
Okay,
Fulcher took over. He tried to appear very much in charge.
Okay, you guys, you can line up for the finals.
He walked over to Leslie.
Okay, you had your fun. You can run on up to the hopscotch now.
But I won the heat, she said.
Gary lowered his head like a bull.
Girls aren't supposed to play on the lower field. Better get up there before one of the teachers sees you.
I want to run, she said quietly.
You already did.
What's the matter, Fulcher?
All Jess's anger was bubbling out. He couldn't seem to stop the flow.
What's the matter? Scared to race her?
Fulcher's fist went up, but Jess walked away from it. Fulcher would have to let her run now, he knew, and Fulcher did, angrily and grudgingly. She beat him. She came in first and turned her large, shining eyes on a bunch of dumb, sweating, mad faces. The bell rang. Jess started across the lower field, his hands still deep in his pockets. She caught up with him. He took his hands out and began to trot toward the hill. She'd got him into enough trouble. She speeded up and refused to be shaken off.
Thanks, she said.
Yeah?
For what, he was thinking.
You're the only kid in this whole darn school who's worth shooting.
He wasn't sure. He thought her voice was quivering, but he wasn't going to start feeling sorry for her again.
So shoot me, he said.
On the bus that afternoon, he did something he had never thought he would do. He sat down beside Maybelle. It was the only way he could make sure that he wouldn't have Leslie plunking herself down beside him. Lord, the girl had no notion of what you did and didn't do. He stared out the window, but he knew she had come and was sitting across the aisle from them. He heard her say Jess once, but the bus was noisy enough that he could pretend he hadn't heard. When they came to the stop, he grabbed Maybelle's hand and dragged her off, conscious that Leslie was right behind them. But she didn't try to speak to him again, nor did she follow them. She just took off running to the old Perkins place. He couldn't help turning to watch. She ran as though it was her nature. It reminded him of the flight of wild ducks in the autumn. So smooth. The word beautiful came to his mind, but he shook it away and hurried up toward the house. Chapter 4. Rulers of Terabithia. Because school had started on the first Tuesday after Labor Day, it was a short week. It was a good thing because each day was worse than the one before. Leslie continued to join the boys at recess, and every day she won. By Friday, a number of the fourth and fifth grade boys had already drifted away to play King of the Mountain on the slope between the two fields. Since there were only a handful left, they didn't even have to have heats, which took away a lot of the suspense. Running wasn't fun anymore, and it was all Leslie's fault. Jess knew now that he would never be the best runner of the fourth and fifth grades, and his only consolation was that neither would Gary Fulcher. They went through the motions of the contest on Friday, but when it was all over and Leslie had won again, everyone sort of knew without saying so that it was the end of the races. At least it was Friday, and Miss Edmonds was back. The fifth grade had music right after recess. Jess had passed Miss Edmonds in the hall earlier in the day, and she had stopped him and made a fuss over him.
Did you keep drawing this summer?
Yes'm.
May I see your pictures, or are they private?
Jess shoved his hair off his red forehead.
I'll show you 'em.
She smiled her beautiful, even-toothed smile and shook her shining black hair back off her shoulders.
Great, she said. See you.
He nodded and smiled back. Even his toes had felt warm and tingly. Now, as he sat on the rug in the teacher's room, the same warm feeling swept through him at the sound of her voice. Even her ordinary speaking voice bubbled up from inside her, rich and melodic. Miss Edmonds fiddled a minute with her guitar, talking as she tightened the strings to the jingling of her bracelets and the thrumming of chords. She was in her jeans, as usual, and sat there cross-legged in front of them as though that was the way teachers always did. She asked a few of the kids how they were and how their summer had been. They kind of mumbled back. She didn't speak directly to Jess, but she gave him a look with those blue eyes of hers that made him zing like one of the strings she was strumming. She took note of Leslie and asked for an introduction, which one of the girls, Priscilla, gave. Then she smiled at Leslie, and Leslie smiled back. The first time Jess could remember seeing Leslie smile since she had won the race on Tuesday. What do you like to sing, Leslie?
Oh, anything.
Miss Edmonds picked a few odd chords and then began to sing, more quietly than usual for that particular song. I see a land bright and clear, and the time's coming near, when we'll live in this land, you and me, hand in hand. People began to join in, quietly at first, to match her mood, but as the song built up at the end, their voices did as well, so that by the time they got to the final, free to be, you and me, the whole school could hear them. Caught in the pure delight of it, Jess turned and his eyes met Leslie's. He smiled at her. What the heck? There wasn't any reason he couldn't. What was he scared of anyhow? Lord, sometimes he acted like the original yellow-bellied sapsucker. He nodded and smiled again. She smiled back. He felt there in the teacher's room that it was the beginning of a new season in his life, and he chose deliberately to make it so. He did not have to make any announcement to Leslie that he had changed his mind about her. She already knew it. She plunked herself down beside him on the bus and squeezed over closer to him to make room for Maybelle on the same seat. She talked about Arlington, about the huge suburban school she used to go to with its gorgeous music room, but not a single teacher in it as beautiful or as nice as Miss Edmonds. You had a gym? Yeah, I think all the schools did, or most of them anyway. She sighed. I really miss it. I'm pretty good at gymnastics. I guess you hate it here. Yeah. She was quiet for a moment, thinking, Jess decided, about her former school, which he saw as bright and new, with a gleaming gymnasium larger than the one at the Consolidated High School. I guess you had a lot of friends there, too.
Yeah.
Why'd you come here? My parents are reassessing their value structure.
Huh?
They decided they were too hooked on money and success, so they bought that old farm, and they're going to farm it and think about what's important. Jess was staring at her with his mouth open. He knew it, and he couldn't help himself. It was the most ridiculous thing he had ever heard.
But you're the one that's got to pay.
Yeah.
Why don't they think about you?
We talked it over, she explained patiently. I wanted to come too. She looked past him out the window. You never know ahead of time what something's really going to be like. The bus had stopped. Leslie took Maybelle's hand and led her off. Jess followed, still trying to figure out why two grown people and a smart girl like Leslie wanted to leave a comfortable life in the suburbs for a place like this. They watched the bus roar off. You can't make a go of a farm nowadays, you know, he said finally. My dad has to go to Washington to work, or we wouldn't have enough money.
Money's not the problem.
Sure it's the problem.
I mean, she said stiffly, not for us.
It took him a minute to catch on. He did not know people for whom money was not the problem.
Oh.
He tried to remember not to talk about money with her after that. But Leslie had other problems at Lark Creek that caused more of a rumpus than lack of money. There was the matter of television. It started with Mrs. Myers reading out loud a composition that Leslie had written about her hobby. Everyone had had to write a paper about his or her favorite hobby. Jess had written about football, which he really hated, but he had enough brains to know that if he said drawing, everyone would laugh at him. Most of the boys swore that watching the Washington Redskins on TV was their favorite hobby. The girls were divided. Those who didn't care much about what Mrs. Myers thought chose watching game shows on TV, and those like Wanda K. Moore, who were still aiming for A's, chose reading good books. But Mrs. Myers didn't read anyone's paper out loud, except Leslie's. I want to read this composition aloud, for two reasons. One, it is beautifully written, and two, it tells about an unusual hobby for a girl. Mrs. Myers beamed her first day smile at Leslie. Leslie stared at her desk. Being Mrs. Myers' pet was pure poison at Lark Creek. Scuba Diving by Leslie Burke. Mrs. Myers' sharp voice cut Leslie's sentences into funny little phrases, but even so, the power of Leslie's words drew Jess with her under the dark water. Suddenly, he could hardly breathe. Suppose you went under and your mask filled all up with water and you couldn't get to the top in time. He was choking and sweating. He tried to push down his panic. This was Leslie Burke's favorite hobby. Nobody would make up scuba diving to be their favorite hobby if it wasn't so. That meant Leslie did it a lot.
that she wasn't scared of going deep, deep down in a world of no air and little light. Lord, he was such a coward. How could he be all in a tremble just listening to Mrs. Myers read about it? He was a worse baby than Joyce Anne. His dad expected him to be a man, and here he was, letting some girl who wasn't even 10 yet scare the liver out of him by just telling what it was like to sightsee underwater. Dumb, dumb, dumb. "I am sure," Mrs. Myers was saying, "that all of you were as impressed as I was with Leslie's exciting essay." Impressed? Lord, he'd nearly drowned. In the classroom, there was a shuffling of feet and papers. "Now, I want to give you a homework assignment," muffled groans, "that I'm sure you'll enjoy," mumblings of unbelief. "Tonight on Channel 7 at 8 p.m., there is going to be a special about a famous underwater explorer, Jacques Cousteau. I want everyone to watch, then write one page telling what you learned." "A whole page?" "Yes." "Does spelling count?" "Doesn't spelling always count, Gary?" "Both sides of the paper?" "One side will be enough, Wanda Kay, but I will give extra credit to those who do extra work." Wanda Kay smiled primly. You could already see 10 pages taking shape in her pointy head. "Mrs. Myers?" "Yes, Leslie?" Lord, Mrs. Myers was liable to crack her face if she kept up smiling like that. "What if you can't watch the program?" "You inform your parents that it is a homework assignment. I am sure they will not object." "What if..." Leslie's voice faltered. Then she shook her head and cleared her throat so the words came out stronger. "What if you don't have a television set?" "Lord, Leslie, don't say that. You can always watch on mine." But it was too late to save her. The hissing sounds of disbelief were already building into a rumbling of contempt. Mrs. Myers blinked her eyes. "Well, well." She blinked some more. You could tell she was trying to figure out how to save Leslie, too. "Well, in that case, one could write a one-page composition on something else. Couldn't one, Leslie?" She tried to smile across the classroom upheaval to Leslie, but it was no use. "Class. Class. Class!" Her Leslie smile shifted suddenly and ominously into a scowl that silenced the storm. She handed out dittoed sheets of arithmetic problems. Jess stole a look at Leslie. Her face, bent low over the math sheet, was red and fierce. At recess time, when he was playing,